Australia is about to cross the nuclear threshold.
And so Friends AUKUS is born.
The UK, Australia and the US.
Thank you, Boris. And I want to thank that fellow down under.
No, we weren't approached, but nor would I expect us to be.
The nuclear sub was a much better platform for us than what the French were offering.
So it's a cruel joke. It's quite insulting.
Jean-Yves Le Drian accused the Morrison government of stabbing his country in the back.
China's foreign ministry spokesman has said
they are using nuclear export as geopolitical gaming tool.
It's almost like we're back to seeking security from Asia rather than security in Asia.
Mr. Porter has updated his register of members' interest, declaring a blind trust paid part of his legal costs.
I mean, imagine somebody turns up to the politician's office wearing a mask, a hood over their head, and presents a bag of cash.
It is simply untenable.
Driving a truck through the requirements of the disclosure rules.
Some of the things that have been said about Christian Porter in recent months are truly outrageous and disgraceful.
The Wrap.
It is time for The Wrap. I'm joined by two fantastic guests. Samantha Maiden is political editor at news.com.au and Stephen Smith is a former Labor Defence and Foreign Affairs Minister. He's now a professor of public international law and the chair of the Defence and Security Institute at the University of Western Australia. Welcome to both of you.
Good evening. How are you? I'm just going to go and hide in a room so my dogs don't start barking.
Look, my dog has decided to bark extra during this lockdown, so I'm with you. Let's start on what is really a huge historic announcement. Stephen Smith, first to you, the Australian new military pact with the US and the UK. Is this alliance the pillar of security and stability in the Indo-Pacific like Defence Minister Peter Dutton says it is?
Well, I think we have to be careful in our analysis of what's occurred. So we have a long-standing post-World War II security and strategic formal alliance with the United States, the ANZUS Treaty. We have a very good, historic, well-recognised relationship with the UK. In more recent times, our relationship with the UK has been perceived as being economic, trade and investment, but we do have an underappreciated long-standing defence, military, strategic intelligence cooperation with the UK. So it's not a, inverted commas, new alliance. It's a strategic partnership, a trilateral partnership based on capability, new technology and the like. And in my view, it's an unambiguously good thing, but it's just one of the things that we need to be doing in the Indo-Pacific, our part of the world. It's a good thing that the United Kingdom, for example, as is consistent with pretty much every major NATO or European Union country, now has an Indo-Pacific strategy, because our part of the world, the Indo-Pacific, the rise of Indonesia, the rise of India, the emergence of China as a great power is why we now refer to our part of the world as the Indo-Pacific rather than the Asia-Pacific. So I think it's an unambiguously good thing, but it's just one of the things that Australia needs to be doing moving forward to make sure that we continue to have peace and prosperity in our part of the world.
Sam, Defence Minister Peter Dutton says China's response to the announcement was embarrassing. So no backing down from the government. Have we passed the point of no return, really, in that relationship?
No, I don't think we've passed the point of no return. I mean, I think that as he has made the point today, which is fairly self-evident, we're never going to be entering into these sort of defence arrangements with China, right? That's just self-evident. I think that is interesting that, you know, the Prime Minister, I suppose, tries to be a little bit more cautious and diplomatic in his statements. However, both the Prime Minister and the Defence Minister have made the point in the past that, you know, you can't rule out conflict in coming years, particularly in relation to Taiwan, which could be a real flashpoint. You've had warnings in the US that, you know, if China was to basically go in and try and take control in that area, as they have, you know, they regard it as, you know, part of China, that would obviously have huge ramifications for the region. And that's why Peter Dutton says rather cryptically that, you know, when he's asked, could we go to war with China, sounds like a rather terrifying prospect, that is a matter for China, right? And he's referring there to, you know, clearly in part Taiwan and that being a potential flashpoint. I agree with Stephen Smith. I think that, you know, clearly these subs sound like they're better than the subs we were going to get. But I think it should be discussed and noted that original sub program was quite troubled. we've dropped, you know, essentially at least $2 billion and counting on a whole bunch of subs that we're never going to get. And the Prime Minister says that he's unapologetic about that because this is a better deal and that we've got a whole bunch of knowledge and information through that process that is useful. But we will have to pay exit fees. You know, these submarines that we're buying are going to be more expensive. The government argues that, though, that they're much, much better because they can stay in the water for much longer and go much longer distances. But even these submarines, even if you accept, and I think everyone does, that they're better than the ones we were going to get when we couldn't get nuclear submarines, we're not going to get them for a decade or longer. So, you know, there's a whole, this is a very long-range project.
Sam, more American troops are bound for Northern Australia. What do we know about that?
Well, that, you know, obviously part of this, the interesting part of this equation is it's not like we haven't had close proximity to the US and the UK in the past. It's not like we haven't had troops stationed up there in the past. But clearly we're going to have a much closer relationship, not just in relation to submarines, but other issues as well.
Stephen, having those troops stationed here, as you know, Sam mentioned, is it a good thing? Should we be pleased about this?
Well, we affected this back in President Obama's time. The United States conducted what they call a global force posture review. We affected our own. And in Obama's visit in 2011, 2012, one of the things we agreed to was rotation of US Marines out of Darwin, starting off with a small number and growing that. We also agreed to a greater rotation or fly-through of US aircraft through our northern ports or airfields, bare air bases, and also agreed the third cab off the rank would be greater utilisation by US Navy of our naval ports, in particular HMAS Stirling south of Perth, our Indian Ocean port. So what's occurred today in the Osmin sort of communique and meeting is just further practical sort of cooperation on those fronts. And I think that's a good thing. It's a rotation device. We don't have US bases in Australia. We have joint intelligence facilities. But the rotation of US Marines and other US force personnel opens up the prospect, as it should, of Australia and the US doing exercises, whether they're humanitarian or disaster relief exercises, with other important countries in our region, you know, whether that's Indonesia, whether it's India, whether for example, it's Japan. And these are the sorts of things that we need to be doing in the current strategic environment. We talk about this as the Indo-Pacific, not just because we see the rise of China, but the rise of Indonesia, the rise of India. It's by the midpoint of this century, we're going to end up in what we call a multipolar world, where there'll be a range of key and important countries, and we need to be developing our compatibility, our interoperability with them, but also making sure that, as Sam correctly put it, we don't want the current strategic competition with China to go from competition to miscalculation and then kinetic conflict. You know, that's not in anyone's interest, and we need to be clear-headed and clear-sighted and avoid that. And so that's what this exercise is one piece of. As a general proposition, with the Chinese criticism of what has unfolded in the last couple of days, you know, there's been no greater expander of their military prowess in recent times than China. Now, any country is entitled to grow its military and defence capability consistent with its economic prowess, and China has done that, and Australia is able to do that as well. There's been no greater increase of nuclear capability than China in recent times, and our acquiring of nuclear-propelled or nuclear-powered submarines, as Sam correctly says, does give us a better capability with a longer range, greater time underwater. The fact that it's taken the government 8 years after a series of diplomatic and defence capability debacles to get there is regrettable, and plenty of people are making that point. I don't need to lay that point on with a trowel, but we will end up with a better capability without any diminution of our sovereign authority or capacity. And so, yes, we have obligations under the ANZUS Treaty, but simply by acquiring a US or a UK nuclear submarine doesn't mean there'll be any operational influence on that by the US or the UK. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of planes that are made in the US and we don't have any impact on our operational responsibility or domestic sovereign capability.
Sam, there's been a lot of criticism about the way that we handled the kind of relationship with France by cancelling that deal. Was that sort of situation bungled?
Look, I think there's been a lot of nonsense said about France, and somehow or other, I've seen it written a couple of times in the Nine papers that Scott Morrison sort of dumped this on France without calling them, and that's just not true. The Prime Minister did have a conversation with Macron the night before it was announced, and he did have conversations leading up to that. Right now, I'm not saying the French are not annoyed, but I do think there's a performative aspect to this, and somehow or other this idea has gotten live that he blindsided them. Look, they can say that, but I don't think that that fits with the conversations that were had. I mean, from his perspective, he had a very serious conversation with him, I think, in mid-year around June, sort of laying out the problems with the process as he saw them. He's obviously not going to bring Macron into the, you know, nuclear subs option until, you know, it's all sort of set up and explaining it to him. I'm not suggesting that they were ever going to be happy when you get a $90 billion deal that's scrapped after you've only spent $2 billion.
Yeah.
But I think that there's been a lot of nonsense. And you know, like, I mean, there was the Prime Minister was interviewed. It was quite funny, actually, this morning on the Today Show. And he was sort of hammered with all this, you know, and you didn't even call Macron. And he's like, I did, you know. And so somehow or other, this idea has gotten live that's not correct in terms of the process. I'm not denying what they've said publicly. You know, they've been running around saying that, you know, they've been stabbed in the back and the world's a jungle. Well, you know, welcome to the jungle. I mean, Australia's got a right to, if they can access better subs, to go and buy them.
Yeah.
And this is the other thing I should say about nuclear subs, is that it's not like we can just go out and buy them, right? Like, I'll just go and get some, right? Like,
just go get myself some subs. Yeah.
But we haven't been able to get them. And then suddenly Biden is saying that we can. And that was something that they never asked Trump because they didn't think they could get. And, you know, basically Biden hasn't shared that technology really with anyone else other than, I think, Britain in the 1950s, right? Mm. So it's not like, Patricia, if you and I sort of thought on a Friday night having a glass of wine, I might buy myself a nuclear submarine. You can just pop out and buy one. Maybe Stephen Smith knows somewhere where you can, but I don't believe that that's an option.
You and I definitely don't, but Stephen Smith might. Stephen Smith, Labor has backed this so far, but of course it doesn't come without risk for the Labor base, does it? I mean, particularly the nuclear element.
Well, just on the French and sort of nuclear capability, firstly, I think it's very important that whilst the French will be very disappointed about this, and it did come, as I understand it, pretty close to signing off on the next stage of the project, they will be deeply disappointed. It's very important that we try to keep on engaging the French. The French have got more assets in the Indo-Pacific than any other European country. The French, the Germans and other European nations, they've all got an Indo-Pacific strategy. They've all been much more forward-leaning in terms of engaging Australia. So, yeah, I know their foreign minister, Yves Le Drian, he's a really good guy, he's very sensible, and we just need to work very hard down the track to try and bring them back into a reasonable relationship, but we have to understand they'll be deeply disappointed. This is not the first time that Australia has been granted access to unique technology. We're the only country other than the US who has the Growler electronic warfare capability, which we acquired back in 2013. And so it's a good sign that this arrangement will open up even prospectively more areas of capability. In terms of Labor support, I strongly support Anthony Albanese's embrace of this. I mean, you can't do these strategic and security things, particularly when they involve our alliance partner, the US, without strong bipartisan support. And Anthony Albanese, in my view, has been quite correct to say, provided that there is no civil nuclear industry, provided there is no breach of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, provided we have operational control, and provided things are attended to in a first-class safety manner, then it's fine. And all of those things, frankly, were put out there by the Prime Minister publicly, part of the briefings, as I understand it. So I think Anthony Albanese has made a very sensible decision. This is, in my view, a good development so far as Australia and peace and prosperity is concerned in our part of the world. Yes, there'll be people in the community, including people in the Labor Party, who may well have their reservations, but that's when the Labor Party and the Labor leader needs to lead to strike out the way. And I think this is very important long-term for the country going forward, that we've got strong bipartisan support of a significant strategic and security development, which will be with us for a significant period of time.
Look, I want to pivot and change the conversation to another big story this week, which is still kind of cooking, if you like, because we don't have an outcome. Scott Morrison has refused to guarantee Christian Porter will keep his job if he's found to have breached ministerial standards by accepting a large amount of cash from a mystery benefactor to pay a legal bill. Here he is with Kim Landers on AM this morning.
Well, you set up a similar process before ousting Bridget McKenzie, so can we infer that Mr. Porter will also leave Cabinet?
I don't think you can infer anything. I think you can just take it that I'm following a process which you'd expect a Prime Minister to do who believes strongly in ministerial standards. These are not ordinary arrangements, and that's why we're seeking to have a full understanding of them. It's a very serious issue. I'm taking it very seriously.
Sam, would Scott Morrison get rid of Christian Porter if he had to?
Yes.
Why didn't he earlier, though?
Well, because you're suggesting that he should have been gotten rid of because he was accused of a crime that he utterly denies. This is different. So this is about a potential breach of ministerial standards. I mean, if we were going to say that, yeah, I mean, what the rules of Parliament say is that, you know, you can be disqualified from Parliament if you've been convicted of a crime. Well, there's no suggestion that anything like that's happened with Christian Porter. He's been the subject of historical rape allegations, which he utterly denies. If we're going to boot people out of Parliament for that, that would be a bit of a problem. Then we'd be booting out people out of Parliament when they hadn't had due process. Now, this is a different issue. This is an issue that relates to whether or not the, as the Prime Minister describes, unusual arrangements or out of the ordinary arrangements for this blind trust, whether or not they comply with the requirement that you disclose things to Parliament. But more importantly, and I think more problematically for Christian Porter, whether or not he has breached the ministerial guidelines. Now, I've heard a lot of things this week about how he might be able to pay the money back or disclose the donor or whatever. Now, I understand some of this is in the eye of the beholder, but the way ministerial guidelines work is pretty open and shut. As a rule, it should be, if you breach them, you go. You can't turn around and unscramble the egg. You can't say, oh, I didn't mean to breach them, I'll unbreach them and then get out of it.
Yep.
Right? It's sudden death.
Yeah.
And the problem here is that what has been done here seems to be unprecedented. Clearly, Mr. Porter believes that he has not breached, you know, that he has fully disclosed the arrangement to Parliament. But when you look at the ministerial guidelines, there's lots of stuff in there about gifts and donations and need for complete transparency and integrity and almost a higher standard disclosure of the Prime Minister. Now, I think if you read between the lines of what the Prime Minister has said this week, he is basically saying that he is troubled by this, but he's obviously seeking legal advice as to whether or not it's a breach of the guidelines. I think there's an argument that if it's not a breach of the guidelines need to change. And I think there's a lot of hint, from the Prime Minister that Christian Porter might not be in Cabinet.
Yep. I think he is indicating that. Stephen Smith, what do you make of what's happened here around Christian Porter, the way that he, you know, declared this blind trust, doesn't know who's funded his, well, some of his legal case?
Well, I used to be, Patricia, as you know, a day-to-day practitioner of these matters. These days I'm not. I'm an independent, objective, impartial.
And probably, you know, significantly happier, I'm guessing.
Academic sort of, and think tank sort of analyst of all of these. But so I don't want to be drawn on Christian, who, you know, I know personally, obviously, and was in the Parliament with him. And I don't want to be pejorative. But so it makes some general remarks. The purposes of the disclosure regime and the purposes of the ministerial disclosure to the Prime Minister is to ensure transparency and ensure that not just conflicts but the perception of conflicts are avoided. And That needs to be, in my view, upheld for parliamentarians generally, but also upheld for ministers. Now, whether from outside the parliament or government we like it or not, whether a minister is in breach of the ministerial code of conduct or not is entirely a matter for the prime minister of the day. But I think we should also be careful about sort of the notion of a so-called blind trust. You know, a blind trust has traditionally been where the conflict or the interests are disclosed, but someone is managing those assets or interests in a way in which the owner of them has no knowledge or idea. They're dealt with, and that avoids hands-on or any, the intention was that any knowledge or interference would fall by the wayside. Well, the problem here, I think, is this is not a blind trust, but it's a donation or a contribution which is blind, and then the response is, trust me, it's okay. So I think that's why it's appearing to trouble the Prime Minister in a matter that he's obviously giving serious attention to. But other than saying that, I'd prefer to duck at Patricia and leave it to Sam.
Duckett, it's a West Australian deal, it sounds like there. It's West Australian looking after each other. Is it because you are friendly with Christian Porter? I mean, every other Labor person I've spoken to has been much more critical. I'll be blunt.
Well, as you would expect, I mean, they're day-to-day political practitioners. I wear a university and a think tank cap for the purposes of this interview, and I don't want those any of my remarks to be to be attributed to the university. So sure, I'm quite happy not to be a day-to-day practitioner. I'm very happy to have a conversation about structural matters, but I'll leave the analysis to Sam.
Well, Sam's not afraid for a bit of analysis, are you, Sam? Not working for a university, Sam. You reckon are his days numbered, realistically?
Yeah, look, I'm really intrigued and flummoxed by this for a couple of reasons, right? It sort of has the whiff of someone who thinks, they're the smartest person in the room, right? And clearly Christian Porter is a highly intelligent person. He's a legal practitioner. He's a former Attorney General. He's a former Treasurer of Western Australia. He's a very successful, intelligent, and I think highly skilled politician. What I don't understand here is, even if he's gotten a whole bunch of legal advice that somehow he can, take money from blind trust, I don't understand where his political radar is on this, that he thought that somehow he could do this and this wouldn't blow up into a big thing, right? Now, there's several layers of problems with that. First of all, the Prime Minister is behind in the polls. He's really got less than 6 months or maybe a bit more until there's going to be a federal election, right? He's not going to die on this hill, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to die on this hill, and why would he? And I think there's real questions of when Christian Porter told people he was doing this. Did he just dump it on the register and now everybody's tainted by this? Did he tell the Prime Minister? The Prime Minister doesn't seem to be answering that question. He did say today that it was only recently that Christian Porter, found out that, surprise, someone's paying his legal bills with his blind trust. But how did that person know where to give the money? How did this transaction work? It's all just very mysterious. I mean, we're really meant to believe that this person who's dumped all the money into this account didn't say to Porter or his supporters, where can I make a donation? We're really meant to believe that Porter doesn't know anywhere where the money's coming from. And look, maybe Porter did do all of this or agreed to all of this with one eye on the ministerial code of conduct, but it feels like maybe he didn't. It just seems really odd to me. And clearly the Prime Minister is saying, look, I'm seeking advice on this. I'm also seeking legal advice. But I really think, he says, don't infer anything. Well, I'll infer something. I really am inferring from his multiple public comments on this that he's saying, this doesn't sit right with me. Because basically, as soon as Parliament comes out back, right, if he was to stay on the front bench, every time he gets up in Parliament, people are going to be yelling, chaff bag, where's the cash, where's bag man, where's that? It's just going to go on and on and on. And it seems kind of laughable, the idea that we're meant to believe that he has potentially been given hundreds of thousands of dollars. He won't even tell us how much it is, right? And we don't know who gave it to him. And that we're all meant to think that that's okay. Well, it's not okay, right? Like, if it wasn't okay for Sam Dastyari to take a much smaller sum from a Chinese donor, it's not okay for him to take a much larger sum from who?
We don't know, and that's the point. We'll be watching over the next couple of days. You've been great guests. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Bye.
Samantha Maiden there and Stephen Smith. Samantha Maiden is political editor of news.com.au. Stephen Smith is former Labor Defence and Foreign Affairs Minister. He's now a professor of public international law and the chair of the Defence and Security Initiative at the University of Western Australia. This is RN Drive.